This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning, everyone, here on WGN Radio Chicago. Orion Samuelson with you on the Saturday morning show. Max Armstrong will be joining me just a little bit later. He has spent much of the week in Kansas City at the annual convention of the National Agri-Marketing Association. That's the public relations and advertisers and copywriters and anybody that's in the business of advertising and promotion and, well, helping people understand what the business of agriculture is all about. But how nice it is to see a weekend that finally will give people the opportunity to enjoy outdoors and give farmers the opportunity to finally get into the fields and start the planting process for the 2016 crop of food, fiber, and energy, which is what our farmers, less than 2% of the population, produces for the world out of the United States every year. But good to be back into the Midwest again, although last Saturday when I left 86 degrees in Arizona to come back to the wind and the chill that we were experiencing here in the Midwest, you sometimes question one's sanity to do that. But last night, enjoyed a good night at the Inverness Country Club dining room with good friends Chris and Dinah Bowers, because, you know, golf course management is a part of agriculture. I have a grandson who's a student in Miami of Ohio in their business school, but he wants to manage a golf course because he enjoys golfing. And it's that time of the year when we see graduation, although he's 2 years away, but we see graduation approaching, and maybe some people that are still wondering what kind of a career path they will follow. And it's amazing how many careers there are in the world of agriculture. But a good visit last night with Chris and Dinah and the nice folks at the country club. Tonight, I'll be in another country club. Tonight, the Park Ridge Country Club. And there, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Cook County North Suburban, will be holding its annual fundraiser and educational program and good meal to raise funds for the National Alliance on Mental Illness program in the North Suburban Cook County area. Look forward to that. It takes technology, besides a lot of hard work and business knowledge, to run a farm today and produce what we need, and technology is still on the front burner. We're going to talk about the kind of technology that's becoming available to reduce the need for insecticides, herbicides, and all of the other products that continues to make agriculture production from about the same amount of acres increasing dramatically. So stay with us, because we're going to talk technology when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Don Porter with Syngenta joins us on the line this morning. We keep waiting for weather to improve to the point where we can get some planting done this year, but that means we have more time for dealing with problems that could arise, and so we look to the products of Syngenta to help you make some of those decisions. Has there been much activity in planting in any part of the country, Don?
It's actually been pretty slow. We had some periods there where some warm up, and then quite a bit of wet weather that has slowed things down. So hopefully things will turn to the better here, and we can get some activity going in the field there.
So let's talk about soybeans and weed control and resistance, because I gather that resistance is becoming a national problem if it wasn't already.
Absolutely. I think that is certainly the key message and one key issue that growers have to grapple with now is around resistance, and that certainly is across many of our modes of action that we have been using, such as the glyphosate chemistries and the SUs and ALS inhibitors. And so resistance is certainly something we have to face with, but certainly with the tools that we have in regards to pre-emergent herbicides, and particularly those pre-emergent herbicides that offer two effective modes of action on some of these key resistant populations are working and can certainly be very helpful in an overall weed management program.
So let's talk about some of your products that farmers will be dealing with this spring.
Yes, we've got a whole portfolio or stable of products within our Syngenta herbicide lineup. Boundary herbicide is a very effective pre-plant pre-emergence herbicide that can be applied up to provide up to 5 weeks of residual activity in soybeans, and certainly provide very effective control of some of these key driver weeds such as Palmer amaranth, water hemp, and the ragweeds.
And other products that are in your artillery?
Right. Broadax XC is new on the market. This will be the second year. Broadax XC, again, has two effective modes of action, very effective pre-plant, pre-emergence herbicide that provides very effective control of morning glories, kochia, Russian thistle, Palmer amaranth, water hemp, and certainly all the grasses, key grasses, foxtails and barnyard grass, for instance.
Are there any deadlines in timing of the use of these products? Do they have to be applied before a certain time?
Yes. In the case of Boundary and Broadax XC, these are pre-plant, pre-emergent herbicides, so the application does have to go out prior to soybean emergence. In the case of Prefix, which, again, is another very effective a residual herbicide that has two modes of action, is again very effective on the difficult to control species such as water hemp and Palmer amaranth. That has the capability of either being applied pre-plant, pre-emergence, or early post-emergence to soybeans. And many of the residual herbicides that are on the market don't have that kind of flexibility that Prefix has. So pre-plant, pre-emergence, and also early post with Prefix.
And as I look at Boundary, for example, up to 5 weeks after planting that you get control?
Actually, so in the case of Boundary, it's pre-plant, pre-emergence to the soybeans and provides up to 5 weeks of residual control of some of those problem weeds.
One farmer recently called me and he said, is this problem of resistance to these products just going to get worse? Are we going to have to continue to come up with new products? And what's Syngenta doing along that line?
Well, it's a great question, and certainly weed control in soybeans has become more complex with the fact that we do have widespread resistance across several modes of action of chemistry. And unfortunately, for the foreseeable future, there aren't a lot of new modes of action coming down the research pike, although Syngenta spends a lot of research dollars in looking for those new modes of action. But those are often in the distance. So we certainly have to use the tools that we have today, but certainly in the case of Broadax XC or Boundary that has two effective modes of action, these products are still effective on these resistant weeds that are giving growers some difficult challenges in soybean production.
When I talk about weed and insect control and all the time and money spent, it hasn't gotten any cheaper for a company to produce a new product, I take it. I take it time-wise and dollar-wise, still pretty extensive?
Yes, it can be upwards of 10 to 12 years and $250 million to develop a chemical, and there's a lot of pitfalls there, of course, as far as the overall getting the product from a safety standpoint, and certainly environmental safety is of paramount importance, and of course user safety is of paramount importance. So to find that one active ingredient is effective and safe is a significant challenge, and that's why it's so important to protect the current tools that we have and to introduce in these weed control programs diversity. So it's not just herbicides. It is also looking at cultural practices such as row densities, making sure that you manage that seed bank down to a manageable level, use cultivation practices, maybe even cover crops, alongside using herbicides. And using that diversity will sustain the chemistry that we have today.
And, of course, we always say, read the instructions and then follow them. I remember several years ago a dairy farmer called me from Wisconsin and said, I like this product. It works so well that I decided to double the dosage. And I said, oh, my God, don't do that. It's the worst thing you could
yes.
do.
those millions and millions of dollars we spent, the most important culmination of all that work, of course, is that label that goes on the jug. And we would most definitely encourage growers to please read that label and follow those instructions, because a lot of research and development has gone in to providing growers with a recommendation that's going to work across all the different environmental factors, across all the different weed population levels. There is biology is very complex, and weeds will certainly take an advantage wherever they can. And so following that label, making sure you use the effective labeled rates is absolutely critical. So it's a great point. And, yes, please abide by that label because that's your best insurance that you're going to get some very good effective weed control.
Final question, in case there's a question a listener has that we haven't discussed, where can they go to get information on your products?
Certainly go to one of our websites, the Syngenta websites that has all the product information. That website is very easy to work through. It has a description of our products as well as information around the labels and any additional information around the material safety data sheets, for instance.
And I take it nomoregrowmore.com is a good website to use?
Yes, absolutely. That would be a good first stop to certainly look across the portfolio and certainly address any pertinent questions that your listeners might have.
Well, Don, I thank you for your time, and I wish you and the company and, well, all of agriculture a successful crop year, and keep on doing what you're doing, okay?
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Don Porter with Syngenta here on the Saturday Morning Show. And here at 26 and a half minutes after 5 o'clock on the Saturday Morning Show, we'll be talking markets a little bit later in the program with Joe Camp. He's a first-time guest on the show, but not
a first-time person in the world of agricultural marketing and risk management. So that's coming up in the second half hour here of the Saturday morning show. And in addition to watching weather that will finally allow planting here in the Midwest and across the country, we're also keeping an eye on Japan that has been hit hard by a couple of earthquakes, damaging some historic 1,000-year-old buildings and older buildings. And so we're keeping an eye on that. But again, let me talk briefly about this time of the year in the country. With good weather, I fully understand a lot of you in the city want to take a drive in the country and enjoy the fresh air and enjoy the spring. And the thing that we warn you about every year is the fact that there will be a lot of farm equipment, slow-moving tractors, planters, tillage equipment on those rural roads and highways, moving from one field to another, from one farm to another, because this is the time when you have to work 24 hours a day to make sure the crop gets planted and in the ground. Well, the thing I want to point out is, if you're driving on unfamiliar country roads to enjoy the scenery, slow down, enjoy the scenery, because you never know, around the next curve or over the next hill could be a tractor and a corn planter doing 15, 18 miles an hour compared to whatever speed you're driving. And legally, farmers have the right to move that equipment on roads and highways. So all I'm saying is be careful. Because if you have a collision with a tractor, corn planter, I think you and your car will lose rather than that equipment. And most of the planting we've been talking about so far has happened central and southern part of the Midwest, Illinois. Yesterday, emailed Joel Kustra, who's a dairy farmer in McHenry County, and he said no planting yet, but probably next week the planters will be rolling on his farm. And I'm hearing by email and by phone from people downstate where indeed planting was underway yesterday. So we have that to talk about. Going to talk a little bit about the importance of agricultural trade to the entire economy. Talk about that on Samuelson Says, because a proposed trade agreement involving about 12 nations on the Pacific Rim, that would be from Southeast Asia to South America, vitally important to America's farmers, ranchers, to exporters, and to people moving the product and all of that, and it's in trouble. And I'm concerned that in the presidential campaign, we're not hearing anything about it except some of them who want to not only see that Trans-Pacific trade partnership go by the side, but would like to eliminate some of the trade agreements already in place. 25 minutes before 6 o'clock here on this Saturday morning show, Orion Samuelson, Max Armstrong with you, and again, a guest to talk markets, because we have been watching market activity and prices, particularly in grains and even in livestock. We've been watching some up and down roller coaster rides. And in the case of corn and soybeans and wheat, we've seen prices for those products cut about 50% from where they were just 2 years ago. So we'll be talking markets, and one more comment on being careful on rural roads and highways this time of the year. There is an emblem called the slow-moving emblem. I live in Sun City, Huntley, which is a golf cart community, and on the back of a golf cart you will have a slow-moving vehicle emblem because they are slow-moving, but basically designed for agricultural equipment, not to be used as a driveway marker, friends, not to be put on something that is stationary. It's illegal. And there's a golf course on Algonquin Road that has two slow-moving vehicle emblem signs on their gates. That's not the correct use of it. And when you use it incorrectly, it takes away from the value and the meaning of it. So that triangle with the red border and the fluorescent orange center, the slow-moving vehicle emblem, to be used only on slow-moving vehicles. Thank you very much. Time now for Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I am Orion Samuelson, this week concerned about the challenge facing agricultural trade. We'll talk about that in a moment. Now, I know you love your glass ceramic cooktop, except when it's time to clean it. So let me tell you about one product that will leave your cooktop sparkling clean. It's Wink Glass Ceramic Cooktop Cleaner, strong enough to remove those greasy, grungy spots, yet gentle enough for smooth top ranges. It cleans, polishes, and conditions smooth top ranges. And special conditioners leave a protective coating, which helps prevent scratches. That's Wink Cooktop Cleaner. You can learn more about the family of Wink products at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. Now my thoughts on Samuelson Says. This past week, over 220 food and agriculture groups sent a letter to the leadership on Capitol Hill. Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, among others, received the letter that said, "You must support the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement because it's vitally important not just to agriculture in the United States, but to industry as well." According to the American Farm Bureau Federation, the trade agreement would boost annual net farm income in the United States by $4.4 billion. And USDA estimates that every $1 billion of U.S. agricultural exports in 2014 provided approximately 7,500 American jobs throughout the economy. And according to USDA, food and agricultural exports reached a record $150 billion in 2014. That supported 1,132,000 full-time civilian jobs, 808,000 of them in the non-farm sector. And we've known over the years that the agricultural export surplus has helped to offset some of the non-agricultural trade deficit. But despite all of that, it is in trouble. It needs approval in Congress. President Obama wants it, in addition to the agricultural and food groups. But it looks like he'll not get his wish that the agreement be signed before he leaves office. Because as you look at the presidential election candidates, I don't find any support for agricultural trade agreements, particularly the Trans-Pacific Partnership. While she was Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton did support it, but now that she's a presidential candidate, she's not. And Bernie Sanders not only does not support it, he wants to cancel existing agreements like NAFTA. And I'm not sure that Donald Trump really knows a great deal about agricultural trade and the importance to the economy. So we cannot let up on letting Congress know how we feel about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. It's 19 minutes before 6 o'clock here on WGN Radio. A delightful weekend ahead, and a lot of people enjoying the good weather, and a lot of those people will be people who are producing our food, fiber, and energy, because they always get nervous this time of the year, despite the fact that every year we get the acres, most of them, planted. There are a few that never get planted because of weather, but we always get it done, and they're anxious to get rolling right now. But once they put the seed in the ground and it produces a product, they're concerned about what kind of a price, what kind of a return they'll get on that. And we'll discuss that with a risk management specialist when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. We welcome to our studio this week a first-timer as far as broadcasting on our program is concerned, but certainly not a first-timer in the world of marketing, agricultural marketing. Joe Camp is Risk Management Specialist with AgriVisor, headquartered in Bloomington, Illinois. And maybe find out just a little bit, Joe, what track you took, where you started, and where you are today.
Yeah, with AgriVisor, I've been the Risk Management Specialist coming on 2.5 years now. Before that, I started at Midco Commodities, also part of GrowMark. Before that, I was a fellow in economics at Eastern Illinois University, where I earned a master's degree in economics. So that link between economics, my passion for that study, and markets goes hand in hand, and I suppose that's why I found myself in the business.
And what about your ag background? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a farm community, Paxton, Illinois. My parents were not farmers. My grandparents and uncles were farmers. So certainly some relationship to the farm, but an appreciation more than a direct experience myself.
And at this point, are you satisfied with the career approach you have taken?
Absolutely. You get out on the road. I do, in my position, talking with producers around the Midwest. We're able to give advice, and then we're able to, when we're back at the office, have a lot of excitement. Markets trade, of course, every second of every day in some sense, and the grains can get awfully excited, and I like that part of it as well.
Well, on this weekend, as we look back at the trading week we just experienced, I'm interested in your reaction to the fact we had the biggest one-day increase in corn prices in 2016. We have the biggest wheat stock since 1987. We've got a lot to talk about as far as the market before we even start planting.
Finally, something to talk about, really. We've got some excitement in a market that has been sluggish and quiet for some time now. That started really on March 31st. Just 2 weeks ago, we had the all-important quarterly stocks and prospective plantings reports. On its face, it leaned decidedly bearish for corn, right, with higher than anticipated acreage intended for that crop. It was a mix for corn and wheat. We had the lowest acres in some time, of course, on wheat, but a little bit of extra stocks found. And then on beans, slightly lower planting intentions as opposed to the final acreage earned in the last crop year. So we had to see, where do we go from here after corn futures in particular fall 15 cents? And in fact, I think the reaction to the reaction of the report was somewhat telling and actually somewhat friendly, as we see now, because we had prices pulled to new contract lows, but contract lows that were just right around that all-important 350 mark. We've seen this several times now, where the big bears, they get traction, but only towards that 350. We could talk about 450 Chicago wheat and also 850 for beans, too, but below those marks, unable to really pull the market a whole lot lower. You find commercial buyers willing to step in and find some value. You find the speculators willing to defend those marks. And so since March 31 report, we were able to claw back those gains in corn, and beans just continued higher. Yet another report we had this week, the April WASDE, again a report that on paper leaned a little bit unfriendly for the grains, yet still big days here.
Were you as surprised by that corn acreage number as just about every other analyst I've talked to?
Absolutely. Maybe that's the issue here that we have going into these reports. The analysts are just getting it wrong, right? Because you saw the top end of trade estimates maybe calling for 91 million acres, but 93.6, absolutely, that's a surprise. The idea behind that, of course, is that we are going to have acres returned from prevent plant from last year. We're going to have acres switch from minor feed grains, certainly in the fringe areas. We saw a decrease in intentions for, say, sorghum, wheat, of course, also barley and the other feed grains there. And also the idea that farmers feel a little bit more comfortable planting corn and getting some revenues in a year that looks as if it'll be once again characterized by tight margins.
And farmers do like to produce corn.
They do, and that won't be any different this year. Although we will watch closely to see whether or not farmers intend to switch acres back away from corn.
We already talked about that.
Now that the market is saying maybe we should do so, if you see the big divergence, of course, between soybean futures and corn lately.
Something else we talked about before we sat down in the studio, fund buying and participation is coming back into the commodity world.
The funds have absolutely been a big player this week. What we see is open interest rising. We see volumes as high as they've been in several months, and that means the large speculators are active. We can talk about the managed money crowd, the fund traders that we're going to read about on an almost daily basis. What they're doing is covering short positions that they've held in corn and wheat. And for soybeans, they're adding new longs because for some time now, about 5 weeks, they've held a bullish bet on the oil seed here. We can talk about managed money, then we'll talk about index funds, the long-only investors that are actually showing up into the market all of a sudden, too, to bet on soybeans and commodities in general, maybe being a potential hedge against inflation expectations, something we haven't heard about for quite a while now.
And index funds tend to hold positions rather than the other funds.
They do. You could think of an index fund sometimes as what might make up even a portion of your retirement fund, a commodity market index. And so we will expect the index funds to stick around a little bit longer than, say, we might for managed money or the fund traders in general.
Do you think fund participation increasing is because of the stock market activity?
I think it's partly the case that that's correct. What we're seeing now is at the beginning of the year, we came in and we had the major indices, the Dow Jones, the S&P, headed what looked to be bear market territory, a 20% correction from the recent high, if we follow the textbooks. But we were able to climb back out of those and actually get close to records for the major indices here lately. What that does is just take away some of the risk off sentiment that can often follow when you have trouble in the equity markets. And that's good in general for the commodity space, the grains included.
The other story this week dealt with China. We talk about China just about every day, but there was concern they might back away on soybean buying from the United States. And yet in the month of March, a record month for the month of March in soybean buying by China.
China's still a very active buyer of soybeans. They've got a hog herd that they're trying to grow, maybe even double over the course of the next 10 or 15 years. They need the soy protein. They have to come, in often cases, to the U.S. to get that. But we will continue to watch whether the Chinese come to the U.S. or whether we continue to lose share against competitors like, say, Argentina and Brazil, of course.
So when it comes to soybeans, how big a purchase does China make in soybean oil? Are they big purchasers of oil?
You could think of Asia being primarily a consumer of palm oil being the biggest edible oil market by far. But what we're seeing is a big storyline here for the soy complex is that El Nino has caused drought in Southeast Asia, Malaysia, and Indonesia, the biggest producers of palm. And what that has caused is the market to have to provide a substitute. And lately that has been U.S. soy oil. So speculators have really grabbed on to the bullish idea behind soy oil. And that has been a big boost to the soy complex in general and soybeans in particular, which also, I believe, are propping up corn and wheat, too.
Is China's activity in corn production beginning to have an impact that you're watching?
Production, we will watch Chinese yields if they continue to grow from here. We'll watch Chinese weather very closely because they have enjoyed almost more than a decade of very good weather conditions. Besides being able to actually escape a few droughts here and there pretty well, they've been on track for higher yields throughout the years. But less so on the production side than what we'll watch on their stocks inventories, of course, right? They have a lot of state-owned surpluses still. The idea is that maybe they're going to start to want to unwind those and be have less of a hand in the market. That's yet to be seen, though.
And one other story in the soybean world this week, Argentina has had, according to the story, 5% of its bean crop already damaged or maybe put out of business by rain.
Right, and we haven't talked a whole lot about Argentina this growing season because, for the most part, conditions have been good. But we talk about, yes, excess moisture and some damage to the crop and certainly some disruptions to harvest efforts, right? And so that's something we're going to continue to keep an eye on. The USDA recently told us, though, those Argentine crops might be a little bit bigger than they had previously anticipated. So long way to go before we know for sure what's actually down in South America.
And, of course, here we have to plant and grow and harvest a crop. Final question, Joe, and that has to do with the market activity at the moment. What, if anything, should producers be doing right now as they get ready to plant in the grain market?
Before today, Orion, soybean prices had risen by nearly a dollar in a matter of 5 or 6 weeks. I think we should take advantage of that, make catch-up sales for soybeans. We can also use the recent strength of this week to catch up on old crop corn sales. We're going to be patient on new crop corn sales. Back to the soybeans, if we want to take a stab at early marketing efforts for the new crop, this might be a good time to do that as well, maybe a 10 or 15 cent sale to start out.
Still too much old crop corn on the farm?
There's an awfully lot of old crop, and that needs to move. But we may start to see that as prices come back to these levels that had previously gotten away from us.
Well, Joe, welcome to our program. We look forward to having you with us again. Joe Camp, who is the risk management specialist at AgriVisor in Bloomington, Illinois. Well, whether you're a gardener or a corn grower or a soybean grower, I hope you enjoy this weekend because, yes, indeed, a lot of seed and a lot of plants will be going into the ground across the Midwest. Finally, with drier weather and temperatures that are beginning to warm up for the growing season. So here's to a good crop for you. And again, tonight, looking forward to being at the Park Ridge Country Club, where the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Cook County, North Suburban, will be holding its annual fundraiser. I'll be there to MC that event and participate in some of the auction items as well. So see you tonight, Park Ridge Country Club. And as always, we thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. Max Armstrong, not with us this morning. He was in Kansas City all week for the annual event, the National Agri-Marketing Association annual get-together there. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Thank you for joining us.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.